Well, can I say welcome back? I should say welcome back to myself. This is the Archaeology News Weekly, and I am David Connolly. I actually did manage to survive the rigours of a field survey in Jordan, and also a nice little visit up to Damascus and the Crater Chevalier in Syria. It's very good to be back, and I hope you haven't missed us too much. Anyway, without further ado, this news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. The world's first temple is examined in Turkey. An Alpine Pompeii from the Stone Age could be discovered in Switzerland. A prehistoric child was buried with a toy hedgehog at Stonehenge. And in Maine, USA, we have news on the largest prehistoric settlement from the area. Bones from a prehistoric war found in Germany. And while we're at it, a Bronze Age axe is found by a metal detectorist in England. Stonehenge is older than believed. The argument continues, of course. And to keep going with the thread of who is older, the Copper Age in Europe began earlier than previously believed, according to new finds from Serbia. A spectacular rock art find rewrites Australian history, and on the other side of the world, prehistoric cave paintings are found to have taken 20,000 years to complete. Finally, we have a report on a Bronze Age settlement discovered in Sicily. It's likely the megaliths at the Neolithic site of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey once supported roofs. Archaeologists have found floors constructed of burnt lime and clay within the stone circles, the earliest such floors ever discovered. The press there is fond of calling the site the Turkish Stonehenge, but the comparison hardly does justice to the 25-acre site of at least seven stone circles. The first structures at Göbekli Tepe were built as early as 10,000 BCE, predating the British counterpart by about 7,000 years. The oldest man-made place of worship yet discovered, Göbekli Tepe is one of the most important monuments in the world, so says Hasan Karabulut, associate curator of the nearby Urfa Museum. Göbekli Tepe's circles range from 30 to 100 feet in diameter and are surrounded by rectangular stone walls about 6 foot high. Many of the pillars are carved with elaborate animal figure reliefs. In addition to bulls, foxes and cranes, representations of lions, ducks, scorpions, ants, spiders and snakes appear on the pillars. Freestanding sculptures depicting the animals have also been found within the circles. During the most recent excavation season, archaeologists uncovered the statue of a human and sculptures of a vulture's head and a boar. Excavations have revealed that Göbekli Tepe was constructed in two stages, the oldest structures belonging to what the archaeologists called the early pre-pottery Neolithic A period, which ended around 9000 BCE. Strangely enough, the later remains, which date to the pre-pottery Neolithic B period, or about 8000 BCE, are less elaborate. The earliest structures contain most of the T-shaped pillars and animal sculptures. Archaeologist Klaus Schmidt downplays extravagant spiritual interpretations of Göbekli Tepe, but he does agree that it was a sanctuary of profound significance in this early Neolithic world. He sees it as a key site in understanding the transition from hunting and gathering to agriculture, and from tribal to regional religion. Schmidt and his colleagues estimate that at least 500 people were required to hew the 10 to 50 ton stone pillars from local quarries and then move them as far away as a quarter of a mile before erecting them on the site. Before the discovery of Göbekli Tepe, archaeologists believed that societies in the early Neolithic were organized into small bands of hunter-gatherers and that the first complex religious practices were developed by groups that had already mastered agriculture. Scholars thought that the earliest monumental architecture was only possible after agriculture provided Neolithic people with food surpluses, freeing them from a constant focus on day-to-day survival. A site of unbelievable artistry and intricate detail, Göbekli Tepe has turned this theory on its head. It's one of the most amazing things about archaeology is you can absolutely believe something for decades, like myself. I believe that, you know, you had to have this gradual transition from hunter-gathering to agriculture, and then you can actually have a fully organized society. And then along comes a site like this. There are still amazing sites to be discovered out there, and perhaps we should be discovering them before they all get destroyed by development. Anyway, a geologist has found evidence that a vast rock slide may have set off a tidal wave that buried a lakeside settlement on Lake Mondsee in the Austrian Alps. He's hoping to find funding and mummies to prove it. Alexander Binsteiner, a geologist and flint stone expert, believes that an accident affected prehistoric lake dwellers living on the eastern tip of the Mondsee Lake near present-day Salzburg. 20 to 50 wooden huts, coated with mud or cow dung, stood on stilts alongside the lakefront. The women wore dresses made of flax decorated with shells and snails, and the men wore fibre ponchos and sandals. Similar lakeside settlements were common in the 4th millennium BCE. These collections of slightly elevated huts on the wet ground were scattered throughout the Alps, from Lake Paladru in France across the lakes of Switzerland and Austria to Slovenia and Lake Garda in present-day Italy. The ancient population reached Mondsee Lake around 3600 BCE. They probably came from the Balkans, as the circular designs on their pottery suggest. They felled oak and willow with stone hatchets, using the lumber to make the thresholds of their new houses along the swampy lakeshore. They had amazing metallurgical skills, there you go, which were rare in Europe at the time. They had searched the surrounding mountains for copper deposits, melting the ore in clay ovens. In dugout canoes, not unlike those of the American Indians, they paddled along the region's river networks and sold their goods in areas of present-day Switzerland and Lake Constance. Even Otzi the Iceman had an axe made of so-called Mondsee copper. At approximately 3200 BCE, says Binsteiner, these master blacksmiths were struck by a devastating natural disaster. A cliff 150 metres high and 5 kilometres long broke off from the southern shore of Mondsee Lake and plunged into the water. The geological traces of this disaster were discovered only recently by accident, and estimates are that the fractured cliff consisted of 50 million cubic metres of rock, which would have created a massive tsunami at least 5 meters high, rushing against the opposite shore, inundating all settlements there. Helmut Schlichterl, Germany's leading expert on lakeside settlements, says that Binsteiner's theory of an alpine tsunami is very exciting, and the cliff collapse idea is a completely new approach that could solve many of the mysteries of the Mondsee culture. We know that the settlements here were abruptly abandoned around 3200 BC and that there were no people in the region for almost 1,000 years after. Now the mayor of a nearby alpine town wants funding for an archaeological dig from the state government. Well, I certainly hope he's successful. You can count me in for that one. A toy hedgehog found in a child's grave at Stonehenge is proof of what we have already known, that children love to play. The chalk figurine was probably a favourite possession of this 3-year-old and placed next to the child when they died in the late Bronze Age around 3,000 years ago. Archaeologists who discovered the grave where the child was lying on her side believe the toy, perhaps placed there by a grieving father, is the earliest known depiction of a hedgehog in British history. The diggers were working to the west of Stonehenge in what is known as the Palisade Ditch when they made the remarkable discovery last month in the top of a pit in which the child was buried. Archaeologist Dennis Price said it would not be difficult to envisage the raw emotion and harrowing grief that would have accompanied the death of this child. Amid the aura of gloom that surrounds Stonehenge, it comes as a beam of light to find a small child's toy lovingly placed with a tiny corpse to keep them company through eternity. Well, I don't know about you, but I find that very difficult to be a shining beacon of light to have such a sad thing as this. Anyway, yes. A 7,000-year-old archaeological site in Dresden in Maine, USA has emerged as one of the most significant finds in New England and is shaping the way historians view the lifestyles of archaic people, period Native Americans. The State Historic Preservation Commission is hoping to purchase a 14.2-acre waterfront site using grant money obtained through the Land for Maine's Future program. Since excavation found that there was a village there, it changes the whole thought process on the early people of the area, as it was previously thought that the Native Americans there were just transient. There are only two other places in New England with village-sized sites from the time period, and although they lived in small groups moving around the landscape, it turns out that there's a probability now of larger seasonal communities. The site in Dresden is the largest and most intensively occupied site of its type and age known in Maine. Since the end of the Ice Age about 12,000 years ago, water levels have risen to conceal what was a distinct elevation drop on this Kennebec River location. When the site was home to a native village, experts suspect a major falls bridged what is now Dresden with Swan Island. State officials were first tipped off to the site's richness nearly 20 years ago by amateur archaeologists who stumbled upon stone tools there while hiking across the grounds. However, the previous landowner did not give permission for professional archaeologists to investigate. However, the stone tools delivered to state researchers were tantalizing, and to the trained eye it was clear that the finds dated back to the early and middle archaic period between 8 to 4000 BCE. The Maine Historic Preservation Commission had to wait for its chance to investigate the site until the fall of 2007, when it approached the new owners. The Dresden site stands to become the first property protected by Land for Maine's Future under the provision qualifying significant undeveloped archaeological site. Archaeologists have discovered the bones of at least 50 prehistoric people killed in an armed attack in Germany around 1300 BCE. The signs of battle were found near Demmin, north of Berlin. They are the first proof of any war north of the Alps during the Bronze Age, said state archaeologist Detlef Janssen. One of the skulls had a coin-sized hole in it, indicating that the 20 to 30-year-old man had received a mortal blow. A neurologist said he was probably hit with a large wooden club and died within hours. Scientists planned DNA tests on the remains, which were preserved in a peat bog, in a bid to establish if the victims were related or if they have descendants alive today. Janssen said that most remains were of men of fighting age, but some were also of women and children. That means it's possible the attackers had sacked a village and taken the residents prisoners, or then killed them. Kenilworth in England is perhaps not best known for its buried treasure, but detectorist Roy Crick was lucky enough to unearth a Bronze Age axe, estimated to be between 700 to 900 BCE. While digging with fellow members of the Coventry Heritage Metal Detector Society earlier this year. But the secret of what he found remains with Mr. Crick. He says, "I felt pretty excited, as it's rare to come across such things. It's in excellent condition and still has a sharp edge." He's been metal detecting for more than 20 years, and this really is his best find. Mr. Crick, who is a retired but carries out voluntary work at the Waverley Day Centre, took the axe to Birmingham Museum, where it was authenticated and recorded. He also would like it displayed in the Kenilworth Museum one day. Birmingham Museum's finds liaison officer said that it was by far the finest Bronze Age axe that has been recorded in Warwickshire. You could almost cut your finger on the edge, it's that sharp. Mr. Slark, the finds liaison officer, said he would not put a price on the axe. He said from an archaeological point of view, it is very, very important. And if I can just interject again, I think this is one of the big things. You can't really place a price on heritage. The value of an object is not the money. It's not that at all. It's actually the story that it'll tell you. Coming forward and reporting and recording finds is a great thing to do because you get so much more out of it. And I'm really grateful to the hundreds, if not thousands, of people that are actually doing that. New findings at Stonehenge suggest that stones were erected much earlier than previously thought, challenging the site's conventional history. A new excavation puts the arrival of the famous blue stones, which now form the smallest of the circles, at 3000 BCE, almost 500 years earlier than originally thought, and suggests it was mainly a burial site. The latest results are from a dig by the Stonehenge Riverside Project. Just how many projects are there at Stonehenge? It, of course, is in conflict with recent research dating construction to 2300 BCE and suggesting that it was a healing centre. The 2300 BCE date was arrived at by carbon dating and was the major finding from an excavation inside the henge by Professors Tim Darvill and Geoffrey Wainwright. The dig was the subject of a BBC Time Watch documentary. The new evidence, however, comes from investigation of one of the 56 Aubrey holes, named after the 17th century antiquary who first noted them, which lie just inside the ditch and bank of the original henge monument, constructed in the early 3rd millennium BCE. Re-excavation of Aubrey Hole 7, originally dug in 1920, showed a layer of crushed chalk at the bottom that suggested it once had held a heavy stone. This had been missed by archaeologists twice before. It seems likely that similar evidence still survives in the other Aubrey holes, said Mike Pitts, one of the excavation directors. Mike supposes that very early in Stonehenge's history, 56 Welsh bluestones stood in a ring 87 metres across. This early stone circle would date to 3000 BCE, several centuries before Stonehenge reached its present configuration. The team suggests the 2300 BCE date proposed by the other researchers relates to the time when the stones are moved from the outer pits to the centre of the site. Mike Parker Pearson, Professor of Archaeology at Sheffield University, revived an earlier theory that the holes had held bluestones as the evidence of crushed and compacted chalk had been recorded in the 1920s in three of them. The new report, which is contrary to claims made by the recent BBC Time Watch film, which promoted the theory on Stonehenge as a healing centre built after the practice of cremation burial has ceased, standing stones and burial may have been prominent aspects of Stonehenge meaning and purpose for a millennium beforehand. Geoffrey Wainwright, one of the archaeologists behind the BBC film, maintains that it is a healing centre. He does not claim, however, that Stonehenge was a single-use monument. He thinks it was a multifunctional monument, and part of its purpose was for healing. Well, we'll just let them argue that one out. Serbian archaeologists say a 7,500-year-old copper axe found at a Balkan site shows the metal was used in the Balkans hundreds of years earlier than previously thought. The find near the Serbian town of Prokoplje shifts the timeline of the Copper Age and the Stone Age Neolithic period, confirming that metal was used some 500 to 800 years earlier than previously accepted. The Copper Age, or Chalcolithic, marks the first stages of human use of metal. It's thought to have started in about the 4th millennium BCE in southeastern Europe and earlier in the Middle East. Archaeologists at the Plochnik site have also found a furnace and melting pots with traces of copper, suggesting the site may have been an important metal age centre of the Balkans. All this undeniably proves that human civilization in this area was producing metal in the 5th millennium BCE. The Plochnik site was discovered in 1927 and first excavations began a year earlier when the first Neolithic items were found. It's part of the Vinča culture period, Europe's biggest prehistoric civilization. Vinča culture flourished from the 6th to the 3rd millennium BCE in present-day Serbia, Croatia, Romania, Bulgaria and Macedonia. Its name came from the village Vinča on the Danube River, some 14 kilometres downstream from Belgrade. Arnhem Land, jutting out into the Arafura Sea at the top of Australia, has always been a special place for Aboriginal people. Just how special has been reinforced by the discovery of an extraordinary collection of rock art recording life in the area for the past 15,000 years. Alongside ancient paintings of thylacines, a mammal long extinct on the mainland, are images documenting modern-day inventions, a car, a bicycle wheel, a biplane and a rifle, as well as portraits of a missionary and even a sea captain. Scientists documenting the rock art spread across at least 100 sites in the remote Wellington Range say it ranks amongst the world's finest. It also appears to rewrite Australian history, undermining the widely held assumption that the continent was isolated and largely unvisited until the first fleet arrived in 1788. The paintings suggest that people of northern Australia have been interacting with seafaring visitors from Asia and Europe for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. A team of scientists on an expedition to the range recorded 81 images of ships, ranging from the vessels of the Makassan traders of Sulawesi, part of modern-day Indonesia, to dugout canoes, 19th-century British tall ships, 20th-century steamers, and Japanese pearling luggers. They even found paintings of a luxury cruise ship and a World War II destroyer. The scientists surveying the paintings with the help of a local Aboriginal elder say they represent possibly the longest continuous record in the world. The rock art has been known about since the 1970s, when a leading expert, George Kalapuka, was taken to the area by local people. But he saw only a tiny proportion of it, and records of its whereabouts were subsequently lost. It was only recently that they were rediscovered by a doctoral student, Daryl Goose. The team, which travelled to Arnhem Land last month, was overwhelmed by the sheer volume of art. In one rock shelter alone, they found 1,500 paintings. This area is of World Heritage significance, and it rivals the best of any area in Australia. It's right up there with the best rock art regions of Europe, South Africa, and elsewhere. The art contains subjects and styles not found anywhere else in Australia, and much of it consists of multiple layers applied over the millennia. That's just an absolutely amazing story with 15,000 years of recorded history there. And while we're on rock art, scientists have discovered that the prehistoric cave paintings took up to 20,000 years to complete, rather than being created in one session as archaeologists had previously thought. Many of the works discovered across Europe were produced over hundreds of generations, who added to, refreshed, and painted over the original pieces of art. Until now, it's been extremely difficult to pinpoint when prehistoric cave paintings and carvings were created, but a pioneering technique is allowing researchers to date cave art more accurately. Dr. Alistair Pike, an archaeologist at Bristol University who is leading the research, said, "The art gives us a really intimate window into the minds of the individuals who produced them. And what we don't know is exactly which individuals they were, as we don't know exactly when the art was created. If we can date the art, then we can relate that to the artifacts that we find on the ground and start to link the symbolic thoughts of the individuals to where, when, and how they were living." The scientists have been using this technique to date a series of famous Paleolithic paintings in Altamira Cave in northern Spain. The elaborate works there were thought to date from around 14,000 years ago, but Dr. Pike discovered some of the paintings were between 25 and 35,000 years old, while the youngest paintings in the cave were 11,000 years old. Paintings spanning 20,000 years. This goes against what the archaeologists who excavated the caves found with just one period of occupation. Dr. Pike and his team were able to date the paintings using a technique known as uranium series dating, which was originally developed by geologists to date rock formations such as stalactites and stalagmites in caves. By comparing the ratio of uranium to thorium in the thin layers on the top of cave art, the researchers were able to calculate the age of the paintings. The researchers have also applied their technique to engravings found in rocks around Creswell Crags in Derbyshire, which are Britain's only examples of Ice Age cave art. They proved the engravings were made at least 12,000 years ago. Last year, the team visited around 10 Spanish caves and took samples from four, ending up with 20 usable dates. A three-year research grant from NERC has now provided enough funding to get another 130 dates. This would more than double the number of dates for cave art for the whole of Europe. During a new series of digs at Ustica, a small island situated 52 kilometres north of Sicily, a large settlement dating to the mid-Bronze Age, about 1400 to 1200 BCE, has been found. The site was built within huge fortifications and semicircular counterforts and towers. Many of the houses have enclosures and are either round or rectangular, built along streets about a metre wide. The geometric layout of the settlement is very unusual for that time. Within the houses, the team also found pottery, almost intact. In fact, they discovered several hundred ceramic vessels left on the floors, probably because of a sudden wave that hit the island. I hope to hear more about that and the other stories next week. Can I just remind you, there's a few things to catch up with. If you haven't followed the blog that I produced, a video blog for our time in Jordan, get to see what it's really like on an archaeological survey. You'll go to bajrblog.wordpress.com. And while we're on blogs, the Past Horizons blog is always worth visiting. It keeps you up to date with what's going on around the world. So just pop that into Google. Past Horizons, of course, will be coming out with its new magazine, and I think that's coming out on the 4th or 5th of November. And you'll always get new archaeology and heritage employment opportunities from Badger, www.bajr.org. And in fact, Badger itself is undergoing a major facelift. Also, you can find lots more at Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again next week, and I can assure you it's going to be a few months before I disappear again. It is a joy to be back.